All right, guys, pictures up.
Pictures up.
Pictures up.
Let's roll sound.
Rolling.
Rolling.
Sound speeds.
Camera speeds. Two. Asham, take two. Mark.
Set up.
Set.
And action.
Welcome to the Penn Cinema Podcast, your behind-the-curtain connection for movie news and reviews. Now, here are your hosts, Penn Ketchum and David Moulton.
Welcome to the show. I'm David Moulton.
And I'm Penn Ketchum.
What's up?
What's up?
Penn,
what's up?
Where
what's
are up? You today? You're this background you got going on behind you looks a little frilly, looks a little... I don't know, Kayla-ish.
What gave it away? The K on the wall.
The giant K on the wall.
the pink bed sheets. The purple room.
Yeah.
I'm coming to you live today.
Whoa.
Coming to you live today from Kayla's bedroom, or as she's known around the house, Kaylo. So, I got kicked out of my office because Amy and I know that families around the world are dealing with this, but Amy and I are essentially both working from home, which is mostly great, right? but it turns
mostly.
Out, it turns, right, it's mostly great. All the guys listening to the podcast are like, yeah, I get it. It's mostly great, but this morning, the way it just worked out was Kayla is out doing something with her friends and her sister and her cousins and stuff, and Amy's in the office attending a live, like, Zoom training that she has to, like, participate in, and, like, you know, she can't have me, like, sitting next to her going, oh! she said that's disruptive.
What?
And distracting.
Oh, come on. If doctors can't put up with that kind of shenanigans, then
Right, come on. So, all right, now listen, we got news to talk about.
Oh
my we got
gosh.
All kinds of news. I want to lead off with a story that the news isn't really relevant to you and me. It the news is more related to what it's like to be a studio executive in
right.
Hollywood.
Right.
So how it used to be different, and, you know, if you were a big Hollywood big shot in the 80s or even the 90s or even the last 15 years, maybe things were different for you. But now, basically, the way the business of Hollywood is changing, it's not that it kind of sucks being a studio bigwig. And it was kind of an interesting article, but not really. I didn't think it really applied to us either as movie fans or as theater owners or anything like that. So normally, I would completely disregard this article, but the article concluded with a quote that I think is one of the great quotes of all time, right? So they're interviewing this former studio executive, and he's summarizing. This is the last quote. This is how the article ends, and they're discussing doing business in Hollywood, whether it's Paramount, Sony, Warner Brothers, all these really big studios that when I deal with them, I feel like, you know, when I deal with Warner Brothers, I'm like, this is a big deal. I take it seriously. I pay them a lot of respect. I pay attention. And I maintain that relationship because they're a big deal to me. Obviously, I pay really close attention when it's Disney. You know, when Frank Patterson calls, I answer the damn phone no matter what I'm doing. But anyway, So this guy who's a former studio executive and is now a digital – he's now like a chief executive of a digital media company, whatever that means. So I don't know who the guy is, and it doesn't matter. But here's the quote, and I hope that I can find a way to apply this quote to something else in my life, because it's one of the all-time great put-downs. It's one of the all-time great bitch slaps of all time. Here it goes. Here it goes. Disney will remain relevant into the future. All the rest of them are caddies on a golf course they'll never play.
Oh, that's David, so hard.
How would you feel if I said to you, hey, that's great that you're working really hard and making a really big difference. You, my friend, are a caddy on a golf course on which you'll never play.
I would just pack my bags and be, well, done.
Right? I would just get back in bed. That's the kind of thing, like, that's a back in bed quote right there.
Uh-huh.
If you're a studio executive and you read that and you think that it rings true, then you just go back to bed.
Yeah,
you got
seriously.
No. You got no.
Ultimate smackdown.
All right. So anyway, get into it. We got any actual movie news?
Oh my gosh. Director sick. Gareth Davis. You know him from such things as he's been hired to direct the third Tron movie, which would star Jared Leto.
Wait. All right. I apologize if we've already discussed this, and I apologize if I'm an idiot. I don't remember the second Tron.
What?
Was there a second Tron?
Tron Legacy. It's the one with the Daft Punk soundtrack that's so amazing.
Okay.
Oh, my.
All right. It rings a bell, but I don't think I saw it. Maybe I saw it and loved it. I just blew David's little mind. I actually saw it pop.
What?
Did we see this together? Is that what you're trying to tell? When did it come out?
We've talked about this. I mean, this movie, it was on my top 10, I think. A favorite of all time?
Well, then I definitely saw it. Okay.
It's got the Daft Punk soundtrack that like I play all over again, and you're like, oh, that's okay. Such a great soundtrack.
Okay.
You put you in Kayla's room, man, and you forget everything that's going on.
I'm sorry to distract you. So what are you saying about this director we've never heard of has been hired to direct a third Tron, which would star Jared Leto?
Yeah, but he's been hired, but it's still not greenlit. But at the same time, Jared Leto put some tweets out, and he was like, yo, I'm really excited to be a part of Tron Ares. And people are like, what is that, the new name? And it's like, hold on, it could just be the working title. Calm yourself down.
Do we think Aries is like, what do you call it, horoscope? Is that the Aries, like the horoscope sign?
Well, yeah, it could be, or it could be like the Lord of Hell from Greek mythology.
Oh, right.
You know?
could go either way.
You know, bottom of the dollar, if this movie turns out to be a horoscope film, then you win.
All right. Speaking of Dune news. Wait, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go. No, please.
No, you had something to say.
I was going to cover this, but if you want to.
No, you're all over it. It's yours. Okay. I was just going to grab it.
Okay, look. Everyone loves Zendaya. She's all over the place. She's doing good work wherever she's at. She comes out. She says she's hyped for the upcoming Dune trailer, just like me.
So hyped.
You know, I'm super hyped. So in a recent InStyle magazine interview, she said, Dune was incredible. I wasn't in it very much. So when I watched the trailer, I was like, oh my gosh. I called Timothy Chalamet and said, dude, you should be proud. It's a big deal to even be a small part of something with such a massive cast. And I love sci-fi stuff too. It's fun to escape to another world. Now, the reason this is news is one, Dune trailer's coming. Because this movie's supposed to be out in December.
Awesome. Are we going to watch this Dune trailer together in the theater?
I mean,
I think we should.
We should.
Hopefully it'll come out when we open Unhinged. We can watch Unhinged in the trailer and watch the Dune trailer.
Or it could come out when a better movie's in the theater, like Tenet.
Tenet, yes.
Or New Mutants.
Wait. Is Dune a Warner Brothers movie?
Is it?
I think it is. It is. And when we open Tenet, we're required to play three Warner Brothers trailers. I'm putting the pieces together. I'm going out on a limb. And I'm saying, I'll bet you the Dune trailer drops with Tenet.
Really? Is it?
I bet you the three trailers are Dune, Wonder Woman, and...
Yeah, it's a Warner Bros. Legendary Pictures, Warner Brothers.
Yeah. Oh, that's going to be so cool. Watching Tenet in IMAX and the Dune trailer drops, I'll make sure the lights come down. It'll be the trailer where the lights come down first. Oh, hey. Hey, how much you give me if I accidentally program the Dune trailer to play twice.
Double high fives. People will be like, what's wrong? I have no complaints.
The rest of the audience will be like, wait, we already saw this. And I'll be there going, oh, I'm really sorry. I don't know how that happened.
It's got a bookend, the beginning and the end of the trailer.
Yeah. And then, like, if you say to the end of the credits of Tenet, then you watch the trailer again.
I love it. So here's the key thing I wanted to pull from this.
Yeah, go ahead.
Zendaya says she's not in it very much. Now, for those of us who know, Dune, the first book has been split into two movies. So this gives a big hint as to how far the first movie goes. Uh-huh. Because Zendaya's character is a super main character. So if she's not in it much, then kind of have an idea. If you know Dune,
which, like, we know you do.
Like Penn. If you know Dune, like Penn, who has the book in his possession. That's as good as red.
You bet. any you bet, man. I put that thing under my pillow every night.
It's getting great in there.
I'm sleeping like a baby.
Yeah. It props the head just right.
I'm really nervous because I feel like, and maybe we're already there, but I feel like all of a sudden Dune's going to be here and I will have not read the book.
What?
Because when you gave me that book, I felt like I had forever to read it.
What is why I gave it to you so early?
But it's a big damn book. It's going to take me forever to read it.
Hey, the font on that book is kind of big.
All right, I'll check it out.
Yeah, because, all right. Yeah, come on.
Anyway, I have to tell you, as a guy who is sort of lower on the spectrum of knowledge regarding Dune, this story makes me really excited because I love Timothy Chalamet, and I love Zendaya, and I love the fact that she is, like, she has credibility with me. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, if she's excited about the project and she's, you know, pumping this up to Timothy or whatever, I think that's really cool. I don't know. I don't know why. I feel like if it was two different tacky movie stars, I might not quite be – it might not mean as much to me. But something about this just makes me feel like they're all proud to be a part of it, which makes me feel like the movie could be something special.
I'm saying, man.
Yeah. If this movie goes bad, man,
I don't know. Like, just look for me under a rock.
So if you go to the early Tenet screenings in IMAX.
Okay.
I just want to warn you, we've been having some trouble with our programming. So some of the trailers play twice.
It's weird.
It's weird. It's the darndest thing.
Yeah, we'll get it fixed probably when Tenet's gone.
You know what I'm going to do for you, though? What I'm going to do just to show you how much I care? I'm going to play the Dune trailer once and have the Wonder Woman trailer play twice.
Better yet, for my screening, it's just the Dune trailer over and over again.
Right, Dune trailer for 2.5 hours. All right, listen, speaking of sequels, yeah. Aquaman 2 is directed by James Wan, who is now saying that Aquaman 2 will have a touch of horror. What I thought was interesting about it, I read the interview, and I think what was interesting about it was that, and I heard this and sort of reflected back on Aquaman 1, and I'm not sure that I remember what he's talking about, but he's sort of the opinion that the first Aquaman had some touches of horror as well. He referenced the famous trench scene.
Yeah.
Would you describe that as horror?
I remember people talking about how that was the potential where they were going to go forward with more of those things, because they were kind of... Yeah. Scary.
Yeah.
So if you based a whole movie in that.
So I guess if you had those conversations with your friends, then this interview is saying, okay, there's going to be more of that.
Right.
What if you think that if that was a little bit of horror, I don't think that's horror. I think that's just sort of a different flavor of intensity. But if you think that's horror and you liked it, there's going to be more of that in Aquaman 2.
Well, the real horror is that they're still trying to make an Aquaman 2.
Oh, guess what?
What?
I think Aquaman's a Warner Brothers movie too.
Yes.
So, laugh all you want there, tough guy. You're getting an Aquaman 2 trailer with Tenet. Yes.
It hasn't even started production. It's a blank slate.
James Wan, in this interview, also had a funny quote. He said, Aquaman 2 will have more of my scary sauce. What? That's some creepy shit to say. I don't want people saying that.
Hey, good news.
Speaking of movies that are definitely going to get made.
Hey, New Mutants got a new IMAX poster solidifying even more that it's totally a movie and it's for real coming out. Now, what's the point when it's going to be one of the first movies to come out in theaters when they open up? Why make a new poster?
To get the correct date on it.
I guess.
Yeah.
But then put out the same poster with a new date?
We're getting all kinds of posters coming into the building that are identical to the posters that are currently hanging in the building.
Right.
The only difference is they have new dates on the bottom. For example, Tenet is the most obvious of those choices.
Right.
And I went around the building, and I thought this would suffice, but my guys told me this is totally inadequate. I went around the building with a roll of duct tape. You know, put the duct tape over the date, and then I got a Sharpie out and wrote the correct date on there, but they said that was 2 cents.
That's crazy.
I know. What are you going to do? Speaking of 2 cents.
Uh-huh.
By the way, let's go back to New Mutants just for a moment. Yeah. Remember last week when we talked about, I read that email, and I said, that's what it sounds like when a guy's doing his job. Right? So anyway, New Mutants, I just want to confirm for our listeners in Wilmington, Delaware, or Lititz, or really, if you're a Huntington Valley listener, the IMAX in Wilmington is not that far away from you. So, I mean, we're really ragging on this movie, but New Mutants is coming to IMAX. It's opening in IMAX at Penn Cinema on August 28th. So we're in. I mean, we're on board. It's fun to make fun of the movie, but I'm going to be attending the screening later this week. And, by the way, when I say attending the screening,
yeah,
what I mean is I'm going to be entering the secret code into my computer and watching the movie at home.
What?
Isn't that weird?
That's crazy.
So everybody know, have we adequately discussed what a trade screening is?
Yeah, we have.
Yeah, okay.
You can go over it again for anyone who might be new.
All right, I'll revisit it real quick. A trade screening is studios are required to play by law. There's an actual law that stems from the antitrust suits, similar to the Paramount decree that we discussed last week, but it's a different thing. Studios are required to show the movie to film buyers. So I'm a theater owner, but in my role as a Penn Cinema employee, I am also the designated film buyer. So therefore, they need to play the movie for me. Any movie that I am considering booking, I need to have the opportunity to see it before I have to agree to play it. So 9 times out of 10, I don't go to the screenings because there's just too many movies. But I like to go to the big screenings. Sometimes I'll go to the screening just as an excuse to go into New York and see my parents or visit somebody. Or just, you know, if the movie looks interesting to me. I always go to the screenings for the big movies, but not the biggest movies because I like to watch those, with my buddies back home. But anyway, so the screenings typically happen in a movie theater a week or two before the movie opens. And what's happening now is the studios are starting to send links for the screeners so that we can watch them at home without having to come into the city and travel across state lines to see the screening. So I don't know. It's just an interesting, like, before the COVID, that was unheard of, and now it's the normal thing. So add it to the list of weird things.
Wow.
Speaking of weird things.
Yeah, Bloodshot. You remember Bloodshot?
Yeah, unfortunately, I remember booking it. I don't think I saw it.
Yeah, well, when you saw the trailer, you were like, book it, Dano.
Get it
as quick as you can. We got Vin Diesel, who's basically Wolverine, Cyborg Man. Hey, it came out on video on demand, so you could go watch this right now. But
could I?
Could you? But you're not going to, because it's going to get re-released into the theaters. That's how much faith they have into this movie. They're like, yo, maybe you missed it on demand because you didn't have enough time.
Right.
Let's try it out in theaters again. See how it goes.
Right. This is really an AMC gimmick. They're selling tickets at AMCs for 15 cents, which is apparently what they think of this movie.
15 cents?
15 cents.
What?
1-5.
Why 15?
I have no idea. I'm not a studio executive.
So it's not everywhere. It's just AMC.
Here's the thing. It's available everywhere, but AMC is the only chain stupid enough to book this freaking mess.
I got a report just this weekend from a one Diamond Eye Derek that said, hey, Bloodshot's not all bad. I know. I know, the look on Penn State.
Shock! What?
But he also said in a similar conversation, hey, I'm a lot like Penn. I just seem to like movies. And then I forget what they're about.
Poor bastard.
I know. So,
Wait a minute. Now I'm interested.
Yeah.
Is Bloodshot available? Like, can I go watch it, or do I have to pay 15 bucks to watch it at home?
I don't know. You might just be able to just go watch it. Shall we find out?
Because I would watch it if I can just go down the hall and watch it for free, but I'm not going to pay 15 bucks to watch it. I'll go a step further. I'm not going to pay 15 cents to watch it.
Let's see here. It's on Prime, and it's free if you have stars. That's how you watched it.
Can you imagine how much trouble I would be in if some of my studio friends tuned into this podcast?
It has a 4 out of 5 stars on Amazon Prime.
All right, so does SpongeBob.
Oosh, that's harsh.
Boom. That's how it be, David. That's just how it be.
Oh my gosh. Hey, I got more news about things that are dead, like Bloodshot.
Thank God.
Zack Snyder's Army of the Dead, right? It originally had Chris D'Elia on it, but he got in trouble for some bad stuff. Mm. Now they're replacing him with Tig Notaro. I love Tig Notaro, so I'm fully on board with this for a movie I'm not going to watch. How do you feel?
Here's how I feel about him. I don't know if I'm like opening up a can of worms, and I don't honestly remember if this is going to turn me into a hypocrite or whatever, but I like Zack Snyder, and I believe that I will watch Army of the Dead.
Yeah, so Army of the Dead actually sounds like it might be something a little bit different. It's a zombie movie.
Right.
Hold your coffee, because it's actually a heist movie in a post zombie apocalypse world.
Yeah. I think let me pose this question to you. The drama, which I'm not a part of, but the drama around Superman and Batman versus Superman and Batman in general and all this sort of Zack Snyder cut and all this kind of stuff, all that drama, has that tainted everything Zack Snyder does from here on out? Like, can you feel differently about different Zack Snyder movies, or does your willingness to watch Army of the Dead automatically put you in the Zack Snyder camp?
No.
Or am I reading too much into it?
I just think that it's very clear the style of movie to expect from a Zack Snyder from now on.
Right.
Like, there's no question. It's not
right.
Like, oh, Zack Snyder's going to put an interesting twist on this. It'll be like, oh, I know what I'm getting from this movie.
Yeah. And for that reason, I'm on board. I'll go watch Army of the Dead.
Yeah.
Now, I also have to confess something to you. And again, week 82 here, revealing yet again for the 82nd time or the 164th time my ignorance. I don't know who Tig Notaro is. Should I?
I mean, gosh.
Should I know who this actor is?
She's a stand-up comedian. Only
stop it.
Actually, she's really funny. She does really dry humor. You'd probably recognize her if you saw a picture of her. She's really funny. She's been most recently a reoccurring role on Star Trek Discovery, but she's been around.
I see.
She's on a lot of NPR stuff.
She's awkward looking. She plays that like sort of.
Yeah, she's usually like an awkward-looking, very smart remark, very dry.
Right, she's right. Really okay. Good at all right. I know. Yeah, I know her. I didn't know her name, but okay.
Yeah, it's a weird.
All right. Yeah,
but I don't know who Chris D'Elia is, so whatever.
That's really funny because if Chris D'Elia had not been disgraced, then you probably would have learned who Chris D'Elia was.
Probably.
Yeah.
All right.
So, all right, moving on.
Yeah, so I got some big news here. Maybe a discussion starter, maybe not. Okay, so there was an interesting article out this week. There was a bit interesting article out this week about how the industry is changing post or mid-COVID, however you want to look at it.
Can we clarify what you mean when you say the industry? There's a few – you and I talk about three different parts of the industry. Okay. We talk about the exhibition industry, which is what I'm in.
Right.
We talk about the distribution industry, which is all the studios that I interact with. And before you get to distribution, you get into the movie industry, which is the people who actually make the movies.
Yes, that's what we're talking about here. Production industry or movie industry, however you want to say.
Yeah, yeah.
Step one, or I guess step two, because step one would be like scripting, stuff like that, shopping,
right.
Stuff. So the actual production of the movie, that part of the industry is changing drastically. A lot of movies have been moving overseas because the other countries are more prepared or further along in the steps than we are currently to start filming. And along with that, we're having a lot of new regulations.
Hmm.
Now, I heard like on Jurassic World, they're getting tested 3 times a week. They have to isolate before going into production. They have to isolate coming out. They have different teams in different locations. And I guess throughout it all, they've had something like 14 cases or something like that. And every time they've stopped it from spreading by having the people completely isolated and all that kind of stuff. No serious cases. But along this way, a lot of things are changing because these companies are now hiring. Instead of flying their Hollywood crews and the people that they use over and over again out to these sets in other countries to do the filming, they're just going to hire locally. And that's what they've been doing. They've been hiring people from the countries that they're going to because of a couple things. One, a big one, and this isn't necessarily a bad thing, but a big one is the unions have been really slowing down what can and what can't be due because no one really knows what's safe. So they can't agree on safe protocol. And so they can't agree on how to protect the people working. So if you go someplace and you can hire people that you don't have to worry about those regulations, while still, I mean, from what I'm reading, still looks like they're putting a lot of protection in place, just maybe not unionized, agreed upon protection. It's just easier. Cheaper because you don't have to fly the people out there. I guess like in the case of Jurassic World, they pretty much like bought out a whole hotel just to keep their people away from other people. So they'd be one more security thing, even though they didn't need the whole hotel. So that's one part of it is just finding these people out there like that. The other is, so along with American workers like losing out on it, the elder actors are also being replaced with younger actors because of health risk and insurance. John Rhys Davis went on the record saying he feels like he's been phased out. He's lost out on two films because they couldn't get insurance for older actors against COVID-19. And he was quoted as, "I'm just at the bottom end of the 75 to 90 range that has apparently got me 3/4 of a foot in the grave, or actually up to the knee in the grave. There is a tiny little bit in the back of my mind that's thinking it could be over." So,
wow.
Yeah. It's a change. It's a big change. And we were talking before the show, as far as TV goes up in New York, the Big O, my buddy up there who works on in film as a PA, he's saying there's no longer going to be like on location shoots. There's not going to be like hundreds of extras. They're just going to CG or film so in a way that you don't see, you wouldn't see large crowds. Like, it's totally changed the way that kind of stuff's being done. And thus, there's a lot of people out of work.
That's really, I don't know. I mean, I feel like that's awful and also totally consistent with every other industry in the world in terms of suddenly rewriting the rule books and also trying to do so without a consensus on what is and is not safe.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, there's just – obviously this is an incredible understatement. I've never seen such a high degree of uncertainty and lack of agreement on, you know – I mean, it's just wild, like, how different production companies, different industries, different people all have different levels of what they need to feel safe in this environment. Yeah. And that bit about Rhys Davies is brutal. I mean, that's just – I mean, isn't that...
That's sad.
Isn't he a protected class? I mean, I guess if he's... I guess, is that an American thing?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, he's British, right? Or no?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Anyway, you know, it's interesting. I guess I'll just... Like so many things, it's interesting. You know,
yeah.
It's changing, and it's going to... Some of this is going to result in change for the better, and some of it will result in change for the worse. And, you know... It'll continue to evolve and become what it is, but it's fascinating.
And it'll all change again if we get a reliable vaccine.
Will it?
Well, I would think that they might go back to the tried and true measures if they suddenly don't have to worry about the insurance for it and all that stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
I worry about, like, what you just said, but now in the back of everybody's mind, like, 2 years ago... If you said to somebody, what if there's a new disease that nobody ever heard of and we don't have a vaccine for, you would laugh. You'd be like, yeah, what if the sun goes out? What if we lose gravity? Like, it's all just unthinkable stuff. But now, even with a reliable vaccine, in the back of the world's mind, there's this thing that could happen.
What if it happens, you know, again? What I mean? Yeah.
Right. Well, and I don't mean a second wave or a third wave or whatever. I'm talking about something totally different.
Yeah.
Come out of left field, you know, and I don't know. I'm just saying I don't think that a reliable vaccine, I don't think people just take all the changes that are happening right now and throw them out the window and go back to the old days. I think some of the new changes will stay in place.
Yeah, I agree. But let me tell you about a new change on a lighter note, a suggestion for the one Penn Ketchum. For your boys out there like myself who can't eat popcorn, popcorn-flavored M&M's, man.
Whoa.
They're pretty good.
What do you mean they're pretty good?
Like, I had some.
That's a thing?
Yeah. I got them at Sheetz the other day.
Popcorn. How is this not the headline news in our news segment?
You know how people put M&M's in with popcorn? It tastes just
Yeah,
like
they're that. Delicious.
For someone who can't eat popcorn, it hit the fix. I was like, oh, look at that. You got caramel M&M's right there. So I'm just saying... Get those up in the stands because your boy be coming to town.
Okay. All right. I'm gonna get it to work.
That's a new change, post COVID change. So all right, well, let's move on to trailers.
Please.
So we got a repeat from last week because I was the only one who watched it and I completely forgot about it. Turns out I love this trailer. Penn looks like he doesn't love this trailer.
I'm not sure which one you're talking about.
It's for Rook.
Rook.
Yeah.
Rook, yeah.
Yeah. This has a very, like, I don't know if it's just the, it could just be the editing in the trailer. The movie could be actual trash. But the trailer is edited in a very high energy, comedic beats that I kind of really like. And it's about a family that gets involved in a heist. I mean, I'm not entirely sure. All I know is it looks crazy. It looks fast edited. And there's like weird dancing and stuff. I'm fully on board for this movie. I want to see it.
No, I'm 100% in agreement. And I feel like there is a real undercurrent, an undertone of dark humor related to family dynamics.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Which is always fun. You know, that sort of that little thread of a theme throughout the movie, that's always a good sign. Yeah, Rook. The trailer is Rook. If you look it up, don't fall for the 2019 TV show.
Which is why I put a link in there for you.
I got it. I got it. I got there.
All right. What's this other trailer we've got?
The other trailer we got is called Dead Dicks, which is kind of... The title makes me feel like it's going to be a comedy, but it's a straight up horror movie, and I'm kind of conflicted. I feel like this is one of those movies that is going to suck, but I'm going to watch it anyway because I kind of just want to know what happens.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, so the premise is this guy dies in his house, and then he comes back to life, and he's confused by this, and so he's back alive, but he can look over there and see his dead self.
Right.
And he has to figure it out, and he can't figure it out without the help of his girlfriend, who he convinces, hey, you got to watch me die, and then when I come back to life, we'll start putting the pieces together and figure out what the hell's going on here. So she's obviously really freaked out and resistant, but ultimately she gets on board, and the movie apparently is about this loop of him killing himself and then coming back to life and killing himself and trying to figure it out. Not completely unlike Palm Springs, but this looks much more like a horror movie.
Yeah.
Where Palm Springs, I think, was more just trying to be funny.
And it's not a time loop. He
right.
is rebirthed. Like, they kind of show him being rebirthed out of his bed. But there's a tiny aspect of the trailer that mentions probably the bigger plot thread is they keep coming up with ideas of trying to kill him to see if he comes back. And he says, this one didn't actually die before I came back. Something weird is happening. So I'm wondering if they try and kill him, he escapes and becomes the villain of it or something like that. Or then there's duplicates of him running around.
Well, like I said, I was not like completely overwhelmed by this trailer. I would say I was lukewarm, but I can totally see myself watching this movie to see what happens.
Yeah.
And I guess that's a real thing. That's a good compliment. Like, it's compelling. It's interesting. You know, like, that's something.
I'm on the same boat. And it looks like a very European film. It has that kind of like grainy.
A little bit, yeah.
To it, so
it definitely co-stars two people that we've never heard of.
Right,
right, right. Okay. Yeah. All right. Movie review. This week we watched Vivarium, which I looked up. Did you look it up?
No.
Did you look up? Vivarium is the actual word, and when you know the definition of the word, it explains a lot of, or it seemingly explains some things about the movie. A vivarium is like an aquarium, you know, like where you keep your fish.
Yeah.
Except instead of being a fishbowl, it's essentially like a sphere or an enclosed structure designed to observe life. Yeah. So I picture like a big glass thing with some like salamanders in it or something like that.
Yeah.
Not quite a terrarium. A terrarium is like an aquarium, but instead of water, it's just like ground. That's where you put like turtles and snakes and sort of, you know, it has like little rocks in it and stuff like that. So you have the aquarium, the terrarium, and vivarium is a little bit more holistic in terms of like the whole ecosphere of like life and death and the circle of life, which obviously walks us right up to this movie. What do you think about this movie?
Mixed emotions, man. mixed hard emotions, because I didn't like it as much as I thought I was going to. I'll be honest. I didn't know what took. I mean, I kind of was expecting maybe more of a religious aspect from what I had heard. Well, first off, let's just say spoilers. I don't think we can talk about this movie without it.
Yeah, all kinds of spoilers.
Yeah, I people have been telling me stuff I've been reading was all it was about, like, oh, they're in purgatory. They're in purgatory. They're in purgatory. They're in purgatory. But
no,
it's very clear
I disagree
that they're
with
not
that.
They're like it's some sort of alien, interdimensional hijinks going on, and I was I guess my first disappointment came with the opening of the movie, which to me, from knowing what I know about the movie, even in the first like 5 minutes, I was like, oh, I already understand the premise to this. Like the mystery was killed.
What?
And that was the opening was the film of, I forget what type of bird it is, that puts its egg with the other birds, pushes it out, and forces the parents to raise it. And I knew that there was a baby coming. And I was like, oh, okay, so it's some sort of thing that just like gets parents to raise its children. Which is what it turned out to be.
Okay.
You know what I'm talking about?
Sort of. I hear what you're saying, but I disagree that spoiled the movie or that's even what the movie's about.
Well, it just kind of took a little bit of my, like, oh, okay, I thought it was going to be more supernatural, and now I'm expecting it to be more of a, like, a purposeful creature type thing.
Right.
So.
All right. Well, let me tell you where I'm coming from.
Okay, hit me.
I loved this movie.
Oh.
And hated it.
Oh.
this movie really truly shook me. Like it really like touched me. I felt like it was profound. I will not say that I enjoyed it. It wasn't like a fun, entertaining movie. There was definitely like parts of it that were straight up boring, and really nothing really actually happened. Except for some rare exceptions. But I think the way to approach this movie, and I think this is why you don't like it, the way to approach this movie is not who's doing this or where are they, but just that the whole thing is a metaphor. The whole thing is like, so the first time that I knew this movie was going to shake me was when they opened the box with the baby in it. And there's a little message on the inside that says, raise this baby and you get out. And I was like, what? And I feel like there's a part of me that thinks that people who are my age and have kids, I mean, anybody can relate to it in the sense of like looking at it as a metaphor. That Jesse Eisenberg digging that hole is a metaphor for him, like just leaving the house every day. Partly because he doesn't like his family. He just needs to get away, and he's going to go dig, you know. Yeah. And he doesn't want to talk about it. He doesn't enjoy it. It gives him a purpose, gets him out of the house. And every day he goes and digs, and it eventually ends up killing him. He gets nowhere. It does nothing. And I feel like it made me feel incredibly fortunate to have a job that I love and, you know, a career that I enjoy, because I think of all, you know, my friends, or not all, but, you know, some of my friends who get up and go to a cubicle and, you know, they dig a hole for 8 hours and then they come home. And I feel like there's a big part of the world for whom this guy's life that he got stuck in, they accidentally ended up getting stuck in a similar life. You know, they were young and they were carefree and they wanted to buy a house. And, you know, the next thing you know, they've got a mortgage. And of course, this movie is, you know, it's a movie. You know, it's not intended to be realistic. And this this doesn't happen in real life, but it's such a stunning metaphor for, like, they try to get out, they can't figure out how to get out, they run around in circles, no matter what they do, they're back where they started. Ultimately, they don't stay connected, you know, in the meaningful sense. And then ultimately towards the end of the life cycle, they remember what brought them together in the first place. And then the bitch of it is, and again, I can't relate to this because this is not sort of my life, but I see it happening in America, is they go in. The whole thing starts because they go into this place with this guy who sells them this lifestyle. And that guy came from two other people who got stuck in a similar life. So what our two people do is they go get stuck in this life. They raise this baby who essentially does it to them, you know, and then after he sort of kills them off, he goes back to the shop, replaces the first guy, and stands by ready to do it to somebody else. It reminds me of like, I don't know if you have any friends like this, but like friends who are like real loosey-goosey and kind of fun and carefree, and somehow they end up with a child who now is like a banker or like a lawyer or like some real intense, you know, sort of profession. And now their child is either doing it to them, and they're preparing that child to go out and do it to other people too, and sort of perpetuate this trap, you know, that many people feel like they get into. So that's why I say, like, I didn't love it as a movie, but it shook me. It gave me real thought, and made me, just on a personal note here, I'll just say, it made me, not that I'm a pretty grateful guy. I walk around with a lot of gratitude, but this movie really brought out my, you know, made me feel very grateful to do the work that I do and have the family and the relationship with my wife so that I don't feel trapped and so that I don't blame, you know, the people I love. So yeah, I mean, that's not to make it too personal or whatever, but that's how that movie really, the story really connected with me. And I didn't love the movie. I didn't love watching it. But I thought it was a pretty profound storyline. I guess that's the way I would summarize it. I didn't love watching it, but I thought it was a pretty profound storyline.
I like the metaphors and stuff that you're talking about. I think maybe I ruined it a little bit in having read so much about the movie beforehand and about those metaphors that I wasn't necessarily like looking for them or shocked by them because I knew they were there. So I was looking more for like the cinematic reasoning behind what was happening with like the aliens or whatever. And it has some really creepy parts. I mean, just the kids screaming.
Oh, yeah.
Or even when she's like, imitate the other person you met today, and he starts like growing the big things on his neck.
But I think that if you read too much science fiction, alien life, like that kind of thing into it, it takes away from the essence of the story. You know, I almost look at it like when that kid, you know, when there's aliens involved, it's aliens in a figurative sense. You know, it's human beings on Earth who have gotten so far away from what their childhood spirit, their free loving spirit, that they almost are unrecognizable. Mm. When she follows that guy through that little hole in the sidewalk and falls through all those other houses, didn't that underscore for you the idea that just so many families are going through the same thing and so many families are in the same trap, sort of dealing with the same nonsense?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that was stunning. That took my breath away watching that whole, you know, one house after another with all the different stuff.
But then, and then she's like, what is my purpose? And he was like, to be a mother, to raise its children, to go into the world.
Yeah. But then she was like, I'm not your fucking mother.
Whatever.
That was intense. I mean, and that is just wild. Like, that's something I don't know how to interpret that other than maybe they just wanted to like, maybe that was just too good of cinema to pass up.
Right. Right.
You know?
So do you recommend this movie?
I recommend it for somebody who is looking for a thoughtful storyline. Yes, I do.
Yeah.
If you're looking for a good horror movie, I don't recommend this.
Right. I'm right there with you. If you are like, if you like to put your pinky out, if you like, if you like the more like slow, and I emphasize slow burn indie films that make you think, watch it for sure. Yeah. It trods at time. About midway through, I actually looked at it. I was like, how much more of this movie? Cause I'm I'm bored.
Now, I will say,
it picked up.
I will say, and maybe this takes away from my support of the film, but I did, just the way my life worked out, I did have to watch it in two installments. So, like, I watched the first half, and then I took a break, and then I came back the next day and watched the second half.
Do you not respect cinema? Is that what this is?
Hey, everybody wants streaming. You want to watch shit at home? You want to release your movie at home on streaming? That's how we watch shit at home. If you want your audience, if you're a filmmaker and you want your audience to respect cinema, you need to release it in a movie theater where people sit undistracted and watch the entire movie. That's just how it is. I can't tell you, I have watched tons of movies, not as many as Encyclopedia Brown, but I've watched a lot of movies in the last 5 months, and I can, on one hand, list the movies where I've sat down and watched the whole movie, period. Like, it's rare. It is rare.
You probably had the movie on. You had your phone on with YouTube on. Bowl of cereal with the crunchiest cereal in town.
I don't know about YouTube, but definitely, like, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I see how you do it. I get it. All right, so Vivarium. Check it out, maybe, sort of, kind of.
Check it out if you're interested in interesting storylines.
Yeah. Moving on to listener notes, answers, questions, and thought-provoking letters.
I have a segue here. Oh. Maybe you can clarify for me because I skipped it. Connor Not Connor wrote us in about Vivarium.
Yeah, yeah.
But I didn't read it because I was worried that I would spoil the movie for myself.
Okay.
Do you remember what he wrote in? Was it something we need to comment on?
It's the first one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I'll read it to you.
Okay.
I know you two aren't the biggest horror fans, so hopefully you've taken some time to recuperate after watching this one. Spooky! One thing I noticed before watching the movie were the ratings on Rotten Tomatoes. The critics gave this movie a fresh 72%, while the audience gave it a low 38%, which surprised me. First things first, I got to give credit to the movie for making me feel like I was in a time loop. I mean, did you see all those studios at the opening credits?
Yes, 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 Not Connor. I thought the exact same thing. And I wish the smaller movies would stop doing that because it's a sure sign of a low-budget film where everybody in the room needs to have their name on the opening credits. And that's such a tacky sort of giveaway.
Yeah.
It really took it away. It started things out on a weak foot. So yes, Not Connor, I had the same. Yes, go ahead.
Also, did you notice this is a Finnish movie? Like that was
a lot
of the things were because it was a Finnish production.
Right, right.
So I thought they'd never end. All jokes aside, I thought All jokes aside, I thought the movie was great, and I enjoyed every spectacular, frightening moment, whether it was the startling soundtrack or the boys' terrifying mimicking of people's voices. I was intrigued by the concept of this movie, and overall, I think it's a great entry into the ever-expanding psychological horror drama. Props to Encyclopedia Brown. Great choice. That's something we didn't talk about. The kid's voice is always dubbed until he's an adult. That's crazy.
Yeah, and creepy. Yeah.
So, well, thanks for joining us on this one, Connor Not Connor. It was a wild ride.
Yeah, and thanks again, as Not Connor pointed out, to Encyclopedia Brown, Jason, for suggesting it.
Yeah.
Putting it on our radar.
So, what about this next one here?
I thought this was one of the best emails. I didn't know that we needed to put it in the listener's notes, but we'll share it with everyone because I thought it was pretty great. And the only way to share it is to read it. So it's from Chris Hall Productions, and it says, look, I'm not surprised you guys dismissed.
What?
I'm not surprised you guys dismissed my recommendation for Dora. I'm not even disappointed. I would have had the same reaction, and I'm not going to give it another thought. But I know that one day, one fine day, you're going to be flipping through your streaming services or cable listing, and you're going to come across this title, and just for shits and giggles, you're going to start watching it. And you're going to enjoy it. And despite how much you think you will hate it, you will like it. And on that day, I want you to remember one very important thing. I was right. Good for you, Chris. Good for you. Don't sit idly by while these cheap, lazy bastards are too uppity and macho and mature. I'm too good for Dora the Explorer. Good for you. You're calling your shot. You're standing by it. Hey, you don't want to watch it right now? You think you're too good for Dora right now? That's fine. That's fine. I'll wait. That's fine. But someday, and that day may never come, but someday when you watch it, you're going to love it. And I want you to remember one very – it reminded me of the scene in The Godfather where the Godfather takes care of the Undertaker. And he takes care of him and he helps him out with his thing. And the Godfather says, one day I may need a favor, and that day may never come. that reminded me of this note from Chris, so I really appreciate it. I wrote him back, I think, and I said that gave me a legit LOL.
Yeah, I see. I view it as more of a threat. It's one day it'll eat at the back of your brain until someday you're finally like, I gotta know. Was he right?
No, I disagree. I predict now I won't be a jerk about it. I'll let my life unfold as written, but I predict that I never watch this movie. I predict that the day I sit back and reflect on how right Chris Hall Productions was, I predict that day will never come.
That's a dream I live for.
All right, we got a note. Why don't you take this next one?
Okay,
I have a comment on this. It's pretty funny.
This is from Curtis Zimmerman. I know he's written this before, and we probably gave him a nickname, but I don't remember what it was, so I'm just going to call him Curtis Zim.
You know who this is?
Who?
Bob Dylan.
This is Bob Dylan?
Yeah, he goes by a different name, Zimmerman, and he lives here in Lancaster County, but it's actually Bob Dylan. Yep.
Mind blown.
Don't tell anyone.
Okay, yeah, it's just between you and me.
Just between you and me.
So he says, I've recently seen two movies I wanted to see if either of you have ever seen. Penn, this is more for you. Have you seen the documentary Barkley Marathons? It's a documentary on these ultra marathons they do every year. Oh, I'm falling asleep. In Tennessee.
Have I ever seen the Barkley Marathons documentary?
Yeah, have you?
Does a bear shit in the woods?
Curtis Zimmerman says like, it's the best documentary he's ever seen.
I have seen this. I can recite this documentary. I can tell you the names of the guys who dropped out, when they dropped out, how really? Many loops they did, what book they tore when they were running through the woods. So this is a really – I actually – if you could bring yourself, David, if you could bring yourself to lower your armor – put your shield down, deflecting every good sports movie in the world. This is an interesting documentary. So this race that they do in the backwoods of Tennessee is called Barkley Marathons. And is such a hard race that every year, it's not a question of who's going to win. It's a question of, will anybody finish? Like every year they have like 16 or 20 athletes who somehow managed to get in, and there's no website, there's no sign up, there's no structure to it. It's like the Grateful Dead of marathons.
Whoa.
It's a beautiful thing. It's totally like off the grid. And what people always say is, if you are if you're qualified to run it, then you'll know how to get in it. It's wow. It's wild. I mean, it's really, really wild. And this documentary is fascinating because to describe how this race is run, you just wouldn't believe it unless you saw it actually happening. And the guy who's in charge of it is a guy named Lazarus Lake. And Laz put on a race this summer, which I'm actually in the middle of right now. And he's calling it the Great Virtual Race Across Tennessee. And what you do is every time you run, you log your mileage into the Great Virtual Race Across Tennessee website. And the person who won this race has already finished. So you have to run 682 miles across this route across Tennessee. And that's – they call us RATS, Race Across Tennessees. And so the guy Laz, who does the Barkley Marathon, put on this race this summer across Tennessee, and I got an email from him last night. He's now putting on a race and I'm not sure how it's going to work. I'm probably not going to participate because I don't have the time. But he's putting on a virtual race around the world.
What?
So you got to do the amount of swimming that it takes to cross the oceans, and you got to do the amount of running that it takes to cross every continent. And like, he has a route mapped out, and you sign up here if you're interested. So I'm probably going to sign up here just to see how it plays out. But I totally agree with Kurt. This documentary, or Curtis, I'm sorry, is amazing and it's fascinating. And there's so many little details that you can't even imagine about this incredibly bizarre race. So every year, it turns out like one or two people finish, and whoever finishes first wins. But since the race has been in existence, which is like, let's say 15 years, there's like 8 or 9 people who have finished.
Wow.
It's legit. And if I recommend it to anybody, if you have a passing interest in running, I agree with Curtis. This is, I don't know if I'd say the best, but it's definitely one of the best. It's mandatory viewing if you want to get into running.
I will watch this as soon as you finish Doom.
Okay.
So put it on the back burner forever. Oh no, he just walked out of the room.
That was me. That was me leaving.
Going to read Dune. Finally, a reason.
All right. So Curtis also asked us if we had ever seen The Game in 1997, starring Michael Douglas. I saw this movie. I've rented it a couple times back when we still rented movies. I loved it. I thought it was really good because first of all, I like Michael Douglas, so I'm happy to watch him doing anything. And second of all, I love movies where, kind of like Inception, where at the end of the movie, you're not 100% sure that you know what happened.
Right. It's been a long time since I've seen this movie. Long enough for me to not say I can give like a full detail if I liked it or not. But I know that I've seen it more than once. With usually family views. That kind of thing. You had one final question. Are you opening up for Tenet? That's what he wants.
We are 100% opening up. So all Penn Cinemas are opening on August 28th with Unhinged and New Mutants. And also a movie, an interesting little movie called Writing on the Bathroom Walls, which is sort of a coming of age story, if I remember my marketing materials correctly. And so that's August 28th, and then Tenet opens in the IMAX auditoriums, I believe August 31st, but I need to shore that up. So the question that Kurt had is, once Tenet comes out, will you open theater fully, or will you open it up slowly like most places are doing? We will open it up slowly like most places are doing. We will open our 2 15-plexes will open with 7 screens each. And we will open with 2 shows a day, a 4 p.m. and a 7 p.m. You know, they're approximately 4 p.m. and 7 p.m. show. So basically a late matinee and an early evening, 5 nights a week. So all Penn Cinema theaters will be closed on Monday and Tuesday of every week.
Okay.
Until we ramp back up.
Yeah. Cool. Awesome. So let's get into what you watching, what you reading, what you doing, how you partying. What's the world giving you right now?
I've been super busy. I haven't really watched anything of interest. The usual shows that I like. I'm continuing. I have a you know, when you have something out there that you're looking forward to getting, but you don't want to watch it until you have like the ability to turn the lights off and pay attention and focus in. That's me on the last episode of season 1 of Perry Mason. So I'm going into the season finale. I'm excited. I can't wait. I'm looking forward to when I have a minute to watch it. But we've been crazy busy between the theater and just a bunch of stuff going on. So no, I haven't watched much. We had, you know, I train with Yoder Performance triathlon training. We had the annual Yoder Performance camp this weekend. So I was busy all weekend either training or supporting some of the other athletes.
Cool. Very cool. Well, I had a role reversal and had plenty of time to do random things. I finished, and I talked about that I was watching, I finished the Umbrella Academy season 2, which was fantastic. I think I loved that whole season beginning to end. Super highly recommend. I feel like I'm the only one who's watched it or will watch it at this point. I started watching Norseman, which I love the first two seasons. The third season's a little weak, but I'm still into it. And then here's an interesting one. I watched the first episode of Star Trek Lower Decks, and I didn't hate it. But I'm not going to subscribe to CBS All Access to watch it. So I may never watch it again at this rate. It's hard to say. But it was surprisingly not as cringy as I thought it was going to be. That's the new animated Star Trek comedy.
That's a really interesting little distinction that you just made there. And I think that's going to be more and more a common way to describe things. Like, oh, did you like that show? Oh, yeah, I loved the show. Not enough to get the platform that it's on.
Right.
I mean, honestly, that's how I feel about, what was that talk show with Jennifer Aniston? I think it was called The Morning Show.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I love the show, and I would have loved to keep watching it, but not enough to subscribe to Apple TV or Apple Plus or whatever that's called.
Right. They may get me on home video because I have all the other Star Treks on physical. So,
well, it's Star Trek.
Yeah, I might dip in once it's on sale. But here's the big one for this week. This week was Diamond Eyed Derek's birthday. Shout out to Diamond Eyed Derek.
Oh! Happy birthday, dear Diamond Eyed Derek.
Yeah, my man, my boy. So,
how did you celebrate?
Well, me, him, and Chris Hall Productions, we got together.
Hey-o.
And I said, hey, boys, remember that time y'all didn't want to go to the movies with me and I saw one of the best cinematic experiences of my life? Saho. I was one of five people in the theater, probably only five people who saw the movie, and it was insane. And they were like, all right, well, let's give it a shot. And we were done, and they turned to me and said, everyone needs to see this movie.
Stop.
This is a much-needed film in everyone's life because it is absolutely ridiculous. It has 700... plus twists and turns.
Oh man, where did you watch? How do you watch it?
It's on Prime. It's free.
Right,
on Prime.
I'm on it. It's gonna be on my list.
You gotta watch.
I'm watching Saho.
Now, this movie is. I know I talked about it during the review. It's like two. I think it was two movies, and they put together for one in America. So it has a straight up break point halfway through where you can take your little break and come back at another time because it's long. So. Anyway, we had a great time watching Saho.
Speaking of watching Saho, which I legit am totally going to do this week. I'm excited that you mentioned that.
Yes.
You know what other movie has come across my feed every now and then, which I haven't clicked on, but I kind of regret it. Like, I feel like it would be a good choice.
What's that?
IP Man. Intellectual Property Man.
Yeah. Oh, the movie. I bought the fourth one, and I haven't watched it yet. I'm going to do that this week.
Yeah.
So... yeah, I mean, hey, we need a movie for next week. What do you want to watch?
Let's do it.
You want Ip Man?
Ip Man. Which one? Ip Man or Ip Man 4?
Well, it's a lot to ask you to watch four movies, so let's just watch.
No. But can you watch Ip Man 4 without the first three?
Yeah, they're all biographical. So
okay,
you could watch it, but it'll be better if you watch them in order. So let's just do the first one.
Okay. All right. Cool.
Yeah, it's a good movie. So. All right, well, that about wraps us up. So, hey, look, if you want to write into the show and have us, you know, dissect your email live for everyone, best way to do that is podcast@penncinema.com. That's the number one way to get in touch with us. We're also on Facebook. You can find us at facebook.com/penncinemapodcast. What's the best way for people to help spread this around?
Tell a friend.
Yeah. Just, like, open up your window and shout. Get a megaphone. Hey, are you guys listening to the Penn Cinema podcast?
Like Blues Brothers.
Yeah.
You know what a lot of people are doing?
What's that?
I got a call from the city council asking me what's up. A lot of people are writing large messages on their bed sheets. Like, listen to the Penn Cinema podcast. We love David.
Yeah.
We love Penn. Well, not really so much we love Penn, but a lot of like, we love David and listen to the Penn Cinema podcast. And they're then taking those sheets and hanging them out their windows.
Yeah.
But the reason why it's becoming a problem is because they're hanging them down so that they're covering the window in the floor below them. That's not cool, guys. Come on, you can't do that.
No, I mean, put it on the roof for the planes if you need to.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. So like we didn't talk about that in Vivarium. The changing messages on the rooftop.
Yeah,
that was funny. I like that little clip.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, tell a friend that you're listening to the Penn Cinema podcast. It's pretty great.
Yeah. So
it's fun. It's fun for me to travel in these weird different circles, and I'm seeing this more and more where like. I'm somewhere totally unrelated to the movie business, and somebody's like, oh, yeah, I heard you talking about that on the podcast. It's pretty cool.
That's what's up.
That's what's up.
All right. So once again, for the Penn Cinema Podcast, I'm David Moulton.
And I'm Penn Ketchum.
Take care
and party on.
Thanks for joining us this episode. Our hosts would love to hear from you. To contact the show with your thoughts and reviews, email podcast@penncinema.com. This podcast is a production of Penn Cinema. Escape to the movies at Penn Cinema, featuring crisp digital projection, killer sound, reserved seating, and premium power recliners. With locations in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, Wilmington, Delaware, and Huntington Valley, Pennsylvania. Showtimes and tickets available at www.penncinema.com.
Good.
Yeah.
Great. I'm happy.
It's a cut.